Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a show dedicated to empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And really, that's one of the most important things you could be doing these days, right? Just being informed, educated, and finding the best solution for us. We're all unique individuals, so we are tuning in to what our needs are, what our bodies need, and just the path that we need to be taking. And as always, it's such a pleasure to have you joining me for another fascinating in-depth conversation. Every week I have the most amazing guests, and we all learn at the same time. So I'm thrilled to be able to share with you the conversation we're having this week, and that is all about how your organs speak to you. And my guest today is Lee Ankrum, and a little bit about Lee. She is a functional bodywork practitioner with 35 years of experience in teaching and private practice, and she is the founder and director of the Ankrum Institute. After decades of training around the world, Lee has brought together multiple modalities into one comprehensive paradigm-shifting program that takes students through every system of the body in just over 2 years. Her knowledge of anatomy and physiology is deepened by her holistic understanding of the body's organizing principles. So it's my pleasure to welcome Lee Ankrum, who I have to say is a real master of her healing art and is a really special friend of mine who has made such a difference in my health. So I'm just thrilled to have Lee here because every time I talk with Lee, it's, you know, a new world opening up is fascinating. So having said all that, Lee, is your initial introduction. I want to welcome you to What Women Must Know.
Oh, thank you, Cheryl. Hey, I just love sitting and listening to you, too. So it's just very mutual. Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
It's great. And, you know, I really, truly, I always learn so much. You are such a master in your area of healing and your knowledge. So I wanted to have you on. It's been a long while since I've had you on the show, and it was time to bring you back because there's so much that we can talk about. And, you know, it's all so fascinating from your perspective. You have such a deep and profound understanding of the body. And in your private practice, and people come from all over to see you personally, professionally, and also you now have this wonderful school that you have put together called the Ankrum Institute. And, you know, I just want to say, every time I think about you and the success you're having with your Ankrum Institute, I remember when we were together on an amazing journey in Peru when you were sitting there going, what should I call the school I want to create? And I have to say, I came up with the name the Ankrum Institute.
Yes.
So it's like, kind of baptizing it. You know, and
that was 7
years ago. And you have expanding and thriving and then passing on your wisdom and knowledge and expertise to students from all over. So it's just so exciting to see what has given birth out of that intention, Lee, and how you are doing such wonderful work in the world. So having said all that, let's just jump into this topic of how your organs speak to you. Well, what do you mean by that? Let's start there.
Well, I don't think that most people realize, and of course I'm in an alternative field, so it's something that I am working with every day, but most people don't realize that most of the pain that they're experiencing in their body is actually coming from organ. An organ will be driving it. So it isn't that you necessarily have organ pain, but there are patterns that are, some are common, and then you can have your own sort of pain patterns that come out of organs. You know, I like to actually say that there's a French doctor, and he's probably 80-something. He's in well into his 80s. And I'd say probably about 30 years ago, somehow, you know, in his divine guidance, became he began to understand that so much of the pain in someone's body is actually driven by organs. So his statistic, not mine, his statistic is that 65 to 90% of the pain that you feel in your body is coming from your organs. And, you know, I learned visceral or organ manipulation many, many, many years ago. I'd say the first time I ever had a class, and it was, I don't know, 25 years ago. But I didn't actually at that time understand the impact until after I went to osteopathic school where organ work was included, and then the depth really hit me. So most people don't realize that. And there's, so, you know, that,
so,
that
so give
is...
Us- So give us an example, and I just want to say, in traditional Chinese medicine, organs are part of a meridian system, and if you have certain aches and pains in your back or your shoulder, it could actually be, for instance, gallbladder, right? So I don't know if that follows in the same vein that you're talking about, but give us some examples, or let's go through the organs and how the pain shows up for all those organs. Yeah.
Sure, let's do that. Let's do that. You know, commonly I like to start with the liver, okay? So the liver is located sort of at the bottom, not sort of, it is located on the biggest part of the liver is on the right-hand side at the lower rib cage, okay? So the lower rib cage on the right. So, and let me also, before we explore what the pain patterns are, is let me describe something or explain something. Some pain patterns come from, most everybody listening will probably know what fascia is. Fascia is the connective tissue that runs everywhere in our body, and there is connective tissue around all the organs, and the connective tissue throughout the body is all interconnected, interrelated. So you can have some of the pain patterns that I'm going to describe here are coming from fascial patterns, like tracking through your connective tissue. And some of the pain patterns, which is going to be, you're going to be very surprised at some of these pain patterns, are actually patterns that happen because the organ is congested and creates a pressure that then reverberates through the body, resulting in certain kind of pain patterns. So when I describe some of these, then you'll hopefully understand a few more of these, okay? So if we start with the liver is, you know, a yeoman. It does so many jobs in the body. I mean, it has so many jobs. It is the master of all the digestive organs and so forth. It, you know, it cleans, it converts things, it stores things, it breaks down proteins. It does all of this stuff. And so it's not hard with poor eating or lots of medications or whatever, alcohol or whatever, to get a liver that has congestion without you knowing it, okay? But the common pain pattern for the liver is right shoulder pain and right neck pain, okay? So that's coming from pressure to congestion in the organ. The pressure will go right up that whole right side of your thorax and give you right shoulder and right neck pain. So what it does on a fascial level is it goes in and actually rotates your right hip so that you have an anterior right hip, which, let me say, what that means is you'll have a long leg on that side, and it will give you hip pain, okay? So fascially, right tracking fascially, it'll give you hip pain. But the other things about the organ, the liver, that's kind of interesting is there's other pain patterns or other things. Liver is very common for headaches, very common. You know, your liver is involved in the hormones, so some of the headaches can be hormone-related. Some of the headaches can be congestion or toxicity related. So you can have sensitive eyes from liver congestion. You can have feet that feel like you don't want any socks and shoes on. That's liver when you get that. There's liver. Higher amount of allergies comes from liver. So all of these things are liver related. So it's important for the practitioner to really understand these, you know, understand what can be the patterns that come out of whatever the organ is. And obviously in this one, it's the liver. So.
And that's because the liver is toxic. I just want to clarify before we go on. Is it because the liver is toxic? It's compromised. You have, you know, something that's affecting the functioning of the liver.
Yes. So it doesn't have to be that you're at a stage of any kind of like, oh my goodness, liver cancer, or it doesn't have to be that. It can be just that you have an overworked liver that's congested because you're eating either too many processed foods or something along those lines where the liver is being asked to do either there too much alcohol, too many drugs, those kinds of things that are asking too much of the liver. And, I mean, one of the things that can happen with a liver that's kind of really interesting is that it can, like in a car accident with the seatbelt and stuff, even though the seatbelt is around your waist-ish area, it can also drive the liver up higher underneath the rib cage and make it come in to get too condensed. And therefore, you'll have these liver patterns. You can have the liver patterns. Kind of interesting, isn't it? So there's things that can happen to you structurally and things that can happen functionally that will make your make the liver or the organs be challenged in whatever way they're challenged.
Okay. It is fascinating to understand the things that can impact the liver.
Right. So I want to say that there are a couple of organs that are your biggest players in creating pain patterns, okay? So the kidneys are absolutely one of the organs that creates the most pain patterns in terms of, I mean, the liver obviously had a long list of things that can result in pain and dysfunction. But the kidneys do it more often. I mean, it's very common. And the big things for the kidneys, these are the big kidney issues. First of all, let me say that most of us have dehydration going on in the kidneys. Most of us, you've had people on your program talking about water and structured water and how to get more hydrated. Well, you know, reading from a couple of really good renal doctors actually say that we start with becoming dehydrated with our kidneys as young children. So get your children to drink here, okay? Drink some water. And anyway, so that the dehydration, by the time you're an adult, you already have some levels of dehydration going on. And this dehydration, the way it shows up is dun-da-da-da, low back pain. I mean, it will go right down and into your back, and lots of the other types of practitioners will go, oh, there is a muscle in your low back on either side called the quadratus lumborum, and they talk about the syndrome of that, of those being, you know, your issue. But that's not your issue. It is the kidneys tightening those muscles because the kidneys live inside your back at the back, on the back wall, inside the bottom of a little bit just below your rib cage, okay? And they're living where they sit is on your hip flexors against your back wall of your back. So several things happen. One is your entire low back tightens all the way into where your sacrum, that bone at the bottom is, you know, and the top of the hips. I mean, it will get you there and make your low back so very tight. The other thing it will do is tighten your hip flexors. So it tightens the hip flexors. So you see anybody who's at all leaning a little bit forward, that is because the kidneys are actually tightening the hip flexors and it's pulling the person forward. So the kidneys are kind of huge. Because the other pain patterns or the other patterns of dysfunction for a kidney, so here we go. The kidney is a pressurized organ. It's got pressure within itself. And the kidney will give you ringing in your ears. The kidneys can add in to things like some vertigo. The other thing that is important to note about the kidneys is that 60% of your blood circulates through your kidneys every minute. So if my kidneys have tension in them, I could have high blood pressure. So that's one thing from a body work standpoint. Of course you need to go to your doctor. I'm not suggesting that. But from a body work standpoint, when somebody comes into me and they have, you know, high blood pressure, ringing in the ears, I'm adding those up and saying, hey, kidney stuff. I'm going to go, and actually what I am is kind of curious and a detective. Let me prove myself wrong that this is not the kidneys. So I will go and I will palpate the kidneys, how I know how to do that, and see if it's a kidney that is having tension that could be adding to the issue of high blood pressure or ringing in the ears or some kind of vertigo. So kidneys are a really big factor. They're right in the middle of your body, and they're a really big factor for creating these back pain and for creating in the pressure side of it these other issues that I have said. It's big. It's really big.
And you know what's a really major concern that I've seen promoted more and more, and I know people who are dealing with ringing in the ears, or known as tinnitus, that's a really extremely, it creates immense frustration in people because they have this constant ringing and it's so distracting and disturbing for people. And, interesting that it originates from the kidneys. In traditional Chinese medicine, they also say that ringing in the ears is a kidney issue. So they were onto this a long time ago, right?
Well, so
let me hear the other part, and then I have a question. Go ahead.
Okay. So the other part is that because it's the pressure part of the kidney tension, it's that if you are misaligned a little bit with the bones that your inner ear, the way your inner ear is in the bone at the side of, you know, where your ear is, the temporal bone, if that isn't sitting correctly, then what will happen is when the pressure increases from the kidney, it then increases pressure in there in the misalignment, and the ringing is the blood. There's a blood vessel in there, and the ringing is the blood vessel, actually, with this increased pressure. So it's not just the kidney, but the kidney adds to it enough to maybe turn it on. Do you know what I mean? Is enough for it to turn this issue on. So that's one thing with ringing in the ears. I always want to check what's the condition of the kidney and the position of the temporal bone. Okay, there we go. That's the other part.
Okay, so what could cause the position of the temporal bone to go out that would then create the kind of pressure on the blood vessel?
Let me say that most of us have some kind of birth trauma, which we should have a whole other show on birth trauma because that's like over the top. And so most of us, when we get squeezed going through the birth canal, get misalignments of our temporal bones. And then we can have things like whiplashes, you know, whether it's from a car accident or something else, that the bones of the head can actually can compress more and tighten a little bit. You can have concussions that will do things like that. So, you know, anything that's actually, you know, either an impact into the head or something like that, it's going to be something like that that's going to, but it turns, what happens is with tension in the kidney, it turns on a pre-existing misalignment is usually what we're looking at.
Okay. Okay, good. Let's go on. I have lots of questions, but I'll hold them. We have more to talk about.
Oh, no, go
ahead.
I know.
Well, if the kidneys are an issue, then we want to, first of all, make sure we're well hydrated, correct?
Yes.
And that would be a number one thing. And then there's specific nutrition. I mean, I have specific glandulars and other products that specifically support and optimize and nourish the functioning of the kidneys.
Perfect. Perfect. Because that's what people need to do. And I would say that more people that don't even know that they have kidney stuff going on ought to go down that path of making sure they're hydrated and being able to absorb the water, which I really recommend structured water as well. So, and how do you support the kidneys with these glandulars, these other kinds of products? That's perfect because most of us need that stuff, definitely.
Right. And one more thing I just want to say from a traditional Chinese point of view, that kidney energy gets more and more depleted as we are under stress or as we age. So it needs even more special attention at those stages of life.
Yes, I agree. I totally agree. Totally agree. So.
Okay. Let's move on. What's the next
can
organ?
I tell you about my other, other one that that is like, you know, it's so funny because I think that, and I'm glad you just said this because I was going to talk about stress, is that in this last couple of years, and I've been doing organs for I don't know how many years now, a lot, is that I've really, really come into the awareness of what the patterns are from your spleen. Now, your spleen is one of your immune system organs, and I'll just do the simple part that the spleen is making white and red blood cells. I won't get into the whole deal on it, but just to say that where your spleen is located, it is located underneath your respiratory diaphragm on the left-hand side of your body, like if you were to put your hand on the side of your rib cage. So, I mean, to be specific, it's at the level of rib 9, but it's up a few ribs on your side between your armpit and your waist. Your spleen is underneath your respiratory diaphragm. And that spleen, our spleens, because of the kinds of diet and stress we're under, our spleens are overworking. So the spleen is reading in us any kind of inflammation. And most of everybody, I work on 6 people a day. And out of 6 people, I'd say at least 4, probably 5 are coming in with inflammation going on, big time inflammation. And whether it's from food or as they're heightened in stress. So the spleen starts running because the spleen gets signaled, hey, we have inflammation here. And the spleen will make all these white blood cells with inflammation or an infection or something like that. So it's running, running, running. Well, the spleen actually gets hard. It's pretty wild. And what it does is it makes the entire left half of your respiratory diaphragm get rigid. So people having left shoulder and neck pain, which is so common out of the spleen, that's what they'll have, is they'll have left shoulder and neck pain. But it will also reach down and give them left hip pain. And it oftentimes reaches down through the fascia and lifts the left hip up, giving you a short leg on your left-hand side. So, you know, here's the question. When everybody's going to the chiropractor or the physical therapist and they go, oh, you got a short leg. So my question is always like, do you have a long leg or do you have a short leg? Because different, it means something different. So in your spleen pattern, you could have hip pain that comes, and you can have pain from the spleen going all the way down to your left knee, down to your left ankle, going right down the outside. And then the other thing that spleen does it makes your left, it's called your hemidiaphragm, your left half of your diaphragm so tight and so hard. And here it is, you guys, is that your heart is connected to the left side of your respiratory diaphragm. So when my diaphragm goes hard and hard like that on that side, my question becomes, what happens, like, How does that translate some tension into your heart? It absolutely does. What it also does is doesn't let your diaphragm work the way it's supposed to with when you take a breath in, it's supposed to go down and kind of stretch open. Well, that's not going to happen when that spleen is overworking. And I will tell you this, it's so often and so common that that's happening for when people are eating foods that create inflammation for them. That is really, really common, really common. So, that's a big one.
Yeah, it's a big one. And, you know, last week on my show, I interviewed my Chinese herbalist, Angelo Druda, and we talked all about spleen energy and the role of spleen energy from a TCM perspective. So people don't think much about their spleens. You know, it's a disposable organ. You know, if you have damage, right. You can take the spleen out, which I wonder what right. happens then, Lee, if your spleen is removed.
You know what? It's kind of interesting because the roles of the spleen have to be picked up. They have to get picked up in other ways, and you just never have quite the robustness. Of course, your bones are making some of the blood cells and stuff, and so you lose the robustness of your immune system and your blood system when they're taking the spleen out. But whoever they are, is actually thinks that all the immune organs, because your appendix, your tonsils, your spleen, your thymus, these are all immune organs that are obviously looked at as something expendable. Me personally, I'd like to keep all my organs, you know. I just like to have them all, thanks. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I wish I could get my tonsils back. That was such a thing,
you
right?
You and me both.
You know, it was like, oh, you're
right.
Kid is sick. He has recurring colds. It's the tonsils. Let's take the tonsils out. And there are consequences
right.
for taking the tonsils out.
Yeah. Yes, there are. Yes, there are. There are definitely consequences. I actually feel scar tissue at that part of the throat on a lot of people, even though they had them mm-hmm. out when they were 4 or 3 or 5 or whatever it was, is I actually, when I'm doing parts of my cranial and stuff, I can feel scar tissue that's back there at the bridge where the tonsils were into the throat. So it's kind of an interesting deal, really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So another biggie grouping thing is, so this one is one I love doing this one. I love doing them all, but let me say that. But this is really interesting, is that in your solar plexus area, when I'm teaching the class that works this part of the organ systems, is I always say that this is like an information highway here. Because in the solar plexus, there is so much there in your solar plexus. A part of your liver crosses it. And what you have also is, you have your esophagus is going through your respiratory diaphragm right at that level in your solar plexus to go into your stomach, which sits on the left-hand side at the bottom of your rib cage and then a little below. So you have that. Then you have where the stomach empties out is in the solar plexus. And the valve, there's a valve at the bottom of your esophagus. There's a valve at the end of your stomach going into your small intestine. And in that beginning part of your small intestine, there's a little valve. I love the name, the sphincter of Oddi. And this sphincter of Oddi actually receives bile from the gallbladder and insulin from the pancreas. So on the left, you have your pancreas, and on the right, you have your gallbladder. And they get signaled what it is you're eating. So whether bile or insulin or anti-insulin or pancreatic enzymes need to be put into the small intestine there. And one of the things, I mean, obviously this is a reoccurring theme I'm actually saying about inflammation and eating crummy foods, you know what I mean, is that what will happen is that when the sphincter of Oddi it reacts and tightens, and it doesn't let enough bile or pancreatic whatever, insulin, into the small intestine. And what happens when that sphincter tightens up? Somebody feels bloated. Somebody feels like their food won't go down. They often feel like they get too full too fast. And another biggie when that happens, which is really interesting, is nausea or morning sickness for women. I am forever opening that valve when women have morning sickness and the morning sickness goes away. So that is really, lots of people tell me that when they eat, they feel like they get really full and the food isn't going down. And it is in this kind of complex where that sphincter between the gallbladder and the pancreas gets like too tight and won't let things actually pass through easily. So that is a really interesting one, isn't it? It's like, and you don't feel like you feel like you have to like lean back because you can't even put your weight down onto that part of the body right there in the solar plexus. It's a, there's much more in there, but that's the biggie.
And think about all those women who are suffering when they're pregnant from morning sickness, which is, you know, people think it's just part of the process, right? But it, actually it isn't. It isn't required. And it has to do with the sphincter that is tight and not able to regulate what comes in. And if it was corrected, then the morning sickness would disappear.
It does. It's kind of amazing. You know, I had a client and I said to her, she did not want to have a second baby because this morning sickness has been so bad. I didn't meet her until the week before she gave birth to her first baby. But her morning sickness was so bad that she didn't want to have a second baby. But I said to her, I will let you come over, you know, whenever you need to, right before work, and I will let this go for you. So because if you want another child, I wouldn't want you not to have another child based upon something that I can actually help with. So she came, I'd say, oh, I don't know, every 2 or 3 weeks until she got well into the second trimester, and then she was fine. But it took her a bit. I don't know why her body always went to that, you know. And she was not a bad eater or anything like that. It just did. It just didn't function well that way. So anyway, it was pretty wild. And it's not even that difficult, you know. It's not that difficult. I had a client who was referred to me at her fifth or sixth month of pregnancy, and she had been throwing up every day, multiple times a day through that 6 month mark or whatever it was. And when she came to me, I did what I do, and she stopped throwing up. But I actually, at that time, this was years ago, I went when she just had the baby, so the baby was maybe a day old. I have to tell you, the stress on that baby from that mom throwing up every day for that amount of time, the baby looked like a little old lady. She had been so stressed in there from the mom. And she wasn't, I don't know if I want to say that she wasn't getting enough nutrition, but I do want to say that the stress that the mom was under and they were under. And then I treated the baby and she got younger and younger looking and she was totally fine. But she was stressed when she was born from that. I feel for those moms who are going through that, you know. We need more people trained in how to do these kinds of things, you know, much more sophisticated body work than just massage.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you are throwing up or you don't want to eat because of nausea, then you are not being able to take in the nourishment for that growing fetus. So the fetus is going to be affected, as well as the mother is not going to have their own nourishment to carry through a pregnancy. So you just see the consequences.
Definitely. So the part of the deal with working with people like this is that, you know, with the inflammation, with it doing things like this, where it's spasming the sphincter and people are feeling really, really bloated, what is also happening, well, let me say that the client needs to have their part of the responsibility so that it's not like they're coming in every, I work on people once a month, it's not like they're coming in every month in the same condition. It's like one has to look at what they're taking in so that they're not creating this cycle with their organs all the time, you know, really. It's just, yes, there's some self-responsibility that needs to come in here on changing what it is they're eating and finding what works for their bodies.
Yeah,
because the
absolutely.
Other part of this is, if, you know, another part, if we were to go a little further into the digestive system, so there's three parts to your small intestine, and obviously, as I've just mentioned, you have this first part after the stomach that connects to the stomach, the duodenum, and then you have, you know, two other parts of all that 22 to 24 feet of small intestine. And one of the big things that happens in your small intestine is that 80% of the absorption of your nutrition is happening in your small intestine. So 80% is happening there. And with this inflammation, it reduces that the absorption that you're going to be having. And, of course, I don't know if your listeners have heard of leaky gut, but the leaky gut is in the small intestine, so that definitely can go on with poor foods and inflammations. But also what's happening in your gut is, like, most of your immune system is in your small intestine, and it is, I used to think until I got educated that what that statement meant was I had lots of lymph nodes in my small intestine. Well, you do, but that's not what the biggest part of your lymphatics or your immune system is, not that. It is actually underneath in the walls of your small intestine, there is a layer of immune cells. And for all these people having lots of reactions to foods, is what it's doing is it's inflaming those cells. And so it may feel like, you know, in the middle of you gets big, but the other part of the small intestine, where your small intestine is attached to, it's attached to your lumbar spine. So it attaches to your sacrum, the front of your sacrum, and to the bodies, the fronts of some of your lumbar vertebrae. And so it will pull them forward or pull them together and give you more low back pain coming from this inflammation that would be happening in your small intestine. It's like, you know, the more you know, the more you're like, oh, my God, I can't eat anything. But that's not true. But it is this inflammation thing going on is like rampant. So I see it all the time.
Yeah, you know, and it reminds us that everything is connected, right? Everything is connected.
Yes.
It's not as, you know, the lower back pain doesn't just exist on its own. And, you know, in
right.
many cases, probably in most cases, it's related to everything we've been talking about. You know, we have organ stress happening, and that's from
yeah.
how we're thinking or how we're eating. And, you know, it's just, you know, everything is connected. So it's important to understand that we need to address our physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual selves, because everything
yes.
is impacting everything.
Yes, yes. And,
but,
you know,
but such great, but such
about...
great. Yeah, go ahead, Lee.
No, no, you say such great what?
No, I was just going to say, you know, this is such great information for everyone listening, because it is another dimension of understanding what's really driving these chronic pains
yes.
that people have.
Yes.
And if you have a
yes.
chronic pain in your shoulder or your back or wherever, and you go to your massage therapist or you go to your chiropractor, it may temporarily offer some, you know, reduction, alleviation, but ultimately, if it's related to the organ systems and the dysfunction happening in your organs, it's only, you know, it's just a little, you know, quick relief, but never healing at the root cause.
Right, and that, you know, the really sad part is that these other systems, whether they're massage or chiropractic or physical therapist, and the medical system, are all symptom driven. So that what they're doing is that you have your symptom, and they're focusing and getting myopic by looking at your symptom and trying to do something with it, as opposed to actually learning and understanding what is, as you just said, the core or the driving force behind something. You know, that is absolutely what my school is about. My school is about training people to learn to understand, and this organ system stuff is just one part of what it is I'm teaching, so that people will understand that what is creating their pain patterns, and what is, like, how are these forming and where are they coming from? Because what happens is, over time, when I have a pain pattern, over time, it ends up having tentacles reaching out and creating other pain patterns and deepening the pattern that I have. So our other interview a couple years ago was about scar tissue. And so on the same level, organs and scar tissue, they will deepen the pain patterns and start reaching into more and more places. Like talking about the kidney, tension and stress can eventually turn on or turn up the ringing in your ears. So it's like it will enhance or intensify whatever patterns that I have. Say you had a tailbone fall that actually made your sacrum, the bone at the bottom of your spine, compress up, and it compresses my lumbars. Well, then I start having inflammation in my gut, and what will happen is it will turn on the pain patterns that are now doubled because, A, I had the fall that created this narrowing, you know, creating my vertebrae being closer together, and now I've got inflammation pulling on the insides of the vertebrae, and you're just, you know, it's going to heighten whatever pain I have or turn on my pain levels. Because that's the other thing is that we have these pain thresholds. So somebody who says to me, I didn't have this yesterday, and then I bent over, and then I got it. It didn't happen because you bent over. It happened because that was your straw that put you over into your pain threshold, you know. So organs will definitely do that. You might have a beginning of a pattern as well, and it'll just amplify it, you know, exponentially. So it goes into being much more painful for you, you know. And the other thing is don't wait until something's so bad, you know. It's when something's so bad, it's so much more difficult to help the body to heal.
Right. So let's move on, because I want to include as many of the organs as possible in the time we have. So what's our next organ that we need to talk about?
Okay. So the next organ, how about the gallbladder? Let's talk gallbladder. Because the gallbladder, which lives hanging off of the liver. So the pain in the gallbladder is actually pain in the middle, like underneath your sternum or in your back. It feels like there's a stabbing pain in your eighth vertebrae or something, like right in the middle, a little lower than between your shoulder blades, a little bit lower, maybe a hint to the right-hand side. You'll feel like there's a knife stabbing you in the back there. And that's the gallbladder. And then if it's long enough, the gallbladder will tighten around the esophagus and maybe even tighten into the throat. So that's gallbladder pain. Yep. Nice, huh? But the other thing is that, you know, and so there's different kinds of gallbladder stuff that goes on, of course. Oftentimes, people who, you know, diets are not great, you'll have gallstones. Well, and then they run and they get their gallbladder out, and it really didn't need to go out because there are ways in which to help your body kind of break down and help these gallstones to pass through. But there are times when the gallbladder goes, you know, gangrene or something. And of course it has to come out when that happens. So, but I like to save as many organs as possible if it's possible. But that's gallbladder stuff. But what happens if you have your gallbladder out, then you tend to have the pattern I talked about in the solar plexus. With the gallbladder gone, the scar tissue locks up the beginning of the small intestine and does all of that. So one has to have the scar tissue worked when a gallbladder is taken out. And the other thing is to support the function that you need by taking ox bile, you know, by taking bile salts when they eat a meal, so that they don't get the patterns that, as the system is trying to break down the foods with less bile coming, then, which the gallbladder is the bile storage, you know, then they do need to take some kind of bile salts when they eat. So that's the gallbladder
problem. Yeah. Which is so common, right? And that's such a common issue.
Right.
And even having that stabbing pain in the middle of your shoulder blades that, you know, bothers people, but if it's not recognized for what it is, you're not getting the message. So you can't address it and resolve it before it becomes more chronic.
Right. So, and I just actually finished teaching yesterday a module that teaches lungs and heart. And so it's the last of the organ modules that I teach, because you have to have more sensitive hands and be able to have a sensitivity when you're working. So the patterns for the lungs, which is kind of interesting, is that the lungs have a tendency, of course, to make tension in the shoulders, which makes total sense, but also down your arms. It can actually ignite tensions and tingling and things down your arms sometimes. And there is fascia around the lungs. As we all know, it's called the pleura. And when the pleura gets fascia gets adhered, then it can make the lobes of your lungs adhere together. And one of the common pain patterns when you have the lobes stuck together and where the lungs sit, the lobes sit next to each other, is called fissures. And when the fissures get stuck, when the fascia gets stuck and the lobes get stuck together, you have pain right in the middle of your shoulder blade, like it's inside. Somebody will say, it's inside. It's like really deep in there. It's driving me crazy. And it's from the fissures of the lungs being stuck together. Maybe somebody's not breathing deeply. Maybe somebody had pneumonia, asthma, bronchitis, that will create that to happen, and then they get those kinds of pain patterns. But
so
the heart is
so you go in. Wait, hang on, Litley. So in your work, you go in and break up those adhesions of the fascia.
Yes,
and
you do.
Yeah.
And it's so amazing, because we did that work and everybody felt like, oh my gosh, the inside of my back felt so free, you know, my thoracic cavity back. And it was kind of amazing. Everybody was getting up and standing up straight and breathing deeply. Yeah, it was pretty fun. So there's a way to come in to help those adhesions that are between the lobes of the lungs or around the lungs, actually to help those break up and have the lung be able to function and, you know, take more breath in, expand more, for sure. You know, yeah.
You know, this is probably going to take us a little off track, but it's come to mind, and I think it's important to talk about, speaking about the lungs and adhesions, and that is from breast surgery. And I know you taught me this. So whether there is breast surgery or breast reconstruction or mastectomy or anything that's creating scar tissue in the breast, talk about what that can potentially do.
Well, you know, when there's scar tissue anywhere, of course, if it isn't broken up, then it begins to, like, I always see it like roots going out. And so when there's anything happening in the chest wall, and even if it's, an augmentation, then what happens is that the fascia that's on the outside of the rib cage gets tight, and then the muscles between the ribs get tight. It's almost like, I'll say this, use this word loosely, it's like bleeding, meaning that it just, I'm tight, so I make my neighbor tight, and then my neighbor gets tight, and he makes his neighbor tight. So it goes from the outside to the inside, creating tightness over time. And what ends up happening is there's three layers of fascia around the lungs. And so it makes the outer, after it does the muscles in between the ribs, then it gets the outer layer. Then it gets this sort of serous semi-fluid layer and actually turns it a bit crystalline. And then it gets the pleura, which is the one around the lungs. So you're getting layer after layer stuck together. And it doesn't matter. I mean, even with augmentation where the surgical site is small, it will still do that when you have that foreign body in there, make everything really, really tight. So women who have had breast implants, you know, really ought to work with somebody who knows how to free that and then free the rib cage and then get more deep and actually free the fascia that's around the lungs themselves. They should do that. It's huge. It makes a huge difference. Yeah.
Yeah, that's such important information for women.
Yes.
I mean, we can talk about the effect of scar tissue, which we have previously. People want to go
to
the archives.
Yes,
they can get our interview.
Yes.
We talked about the role of scar tissue. But, you know, this is so profound, this information. I think it's probably a revelation for so many people listening, because we stop at the level of where the pain is manifesting, but we don't understand.
Yes.
Or we just don't have access to this information up until now. And
I think
many practitioners just stop at symptom relief, but we never go deeper. So, you know, as we're coming to the end of our show, first of all, we need to talk about your school. Go ahead.
Okay. But let me just take 1 minute to put the crowning glory on and say what happens with the heart. Okay. Just quickly.
Oh, yes.
I will say what happens with the heart. So one of the big things about the heart is, and one of the places that one of the things that most people do not know is that the bag that the heart, the fascial bag that the heart is in, which is the pericardium, and we've heard that name, is actually attaching, both to your sternum. There's so that it will hang it, hopefully, but it goes up and attaches onto the front side of the vertebrae of your neck. So when you have a car accident or any kind of a whiplash, what happens is that your heart, the bag around your heart, gets pulled upward. So your heart gets into tension. And over time, you see anybody that looks like they have a forward head, forward neck, that's because the heart is in tension and it's pulling on the neck. So anybody treating somebody who has had a car accident or had, maybe they've had a fall and they've had a whiplash enough, that whiplash will pull the heart and lock the heart. It will lock the heart. And it may even turn it a little and stuff like that. And what that will do is give you neck pain, neck and head pain. You cannot get a whiplash out unless you work the heart and free it enough to let the head and neck go settle backwards. Okay, I had to tell that too.
Wow.
Okay.
Important.
It's huge. It's huge, Cheryl. It's huge. And it's missed. It's totally missed with anybody helping people with these kinds of issues. And, you know, so many people have had multiple car accidents and stuff. So anyway, that is a very big one. That's a very big one.
Oh, yeah, I'm so glad we talked about that. It's huge because we could do some cranial sacral work. We can, you know, do some manipulation for someone who has a whiplash. But understanding that the heart is affected because of everything you explained, how it's curled up, probably isn't really understood nor addressed.
No. And, of course, it'll make a pain pattern, like make you feel like your vertebrae are tight between your shoulder blades for sure. So it will do that also. It'll really tighten you there. And then, of course, there's so much more to it. But that's kind of the simple or basic principles of having heart stuff that happens. It's very interesting.
It must stress the heart organ out, right? I mean, if that is the case,
totally,
then the organ wouldn't be functioning very well.
Totally. Big time. I mean, it stresses it big time. Yeah, very big. So, well, thank you. About my school, I'd love to just take a minute and say a little bit. Mm-hmm. So my school is located in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and people come from all over the country to come to school. And the format of the school is that we meet every other month for 4 days. So we meet, you know, Thursday through Sunday every other month, and we meet 14 times. And we work through all of the body, both structurally, and then we get to, of course, visceral organs and do that. We also have part of the training is craniosacral. Every time we meet, I teach more pieces of craniosacral. I won't get into why it's so important, in my estimation, to have cranial as part of the program. And, but really teaching people how to see and to learn the principles of the body. I teach a tremendous number of techniques, but my school is not a technique-driven school. It is a principle-driven school. So, because when you understand the principles of how a body really works, then, you know, what's that saying? You know, I feed a man a fish and he eats for a night. I teach a man to fish and he can eat for his life. And so it's like you are not limited to when someone comes in and they have a particular issue. You aren't limited to say, oh, these are the low back treatments. You get to expand yourself and have a view that says, okay, so what are all the things that I need to investigate that could be going on with this person? So we really teach the principles of how a body is working and share that rather than your limitation of saying, oh, A equals B equals C, because nobody's body is A equals B equals C, because everybody has their own history and their own, you know, belief systems and their own spirit. So it's very, very different. Anyway, after 35 years, I'm still excited about it. So that says something, I think, you know. And my website is ankraminstitute.com. And if you're interested at all about me talking about all sorts of things, we have a YouTube channel under Ankrum Institute. And there's a Facebook page that I used to, I mean, I haven't done it in a bit, but did a lot of writings about the body. So, you know, you're not going to hear about my dog. You're just going to talk about the body and what goes on and stuff. And you can email us, and, you know, we're happy to email you back any inquiries or anything.
Well, that's fantastic, and it is an amazing program, and you're training people. So if people want to know more, maybe there's someone in your area that has gone through the training with Lee, or maybe you're interested, check it out. And we've come to the end. So, Lee, thank you for all your wisdom. This has been so enlightening, so educational. I know we've all gained so much from what you were sharing with us about the world of organs and their, you know, ways that they get expressed through pain patterns. I learned a lot, so I am so grateful to you, to your work, to the years you've been dedicated in studying this and to sharing it with the world now. So thanks again. We'll have you back on. We'll talk some more because you're always a fount of knowledge, and I love listening to what you have to say. So you take care, Lee. It's just been a pleasure.
You too.
And we'll talk
thank
soon.
You.
And
thank
everyone
you, Cheryl.
Listening. You're so welcome, and all of you, thank you for listening, and continue the healing journey. And until next time, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.